I'm Derek Russell.
And I'm Brad Locke, and this is The Memo.
A gathering of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and DJournal.com.
Welcome into another episode of The Memo. This is Brad Locke, along with Chris Kiefer on this Monday,
Hello.
November 16th, 2015.
Hello.
What's up, Chris?
Hey, how you doing today? Have a good weekend?
Yeah, I did. And hello, Derek Russell. Oh, we're just kidding. Derek's not here. He lost his voice. You can't do a podcast without a voice.
No, that's kind of an essential ingredient.
Yeah, so Chris, our producer, filling in here. And yeah, good weekend. Kind of was depressing weekend, all that happened in Paris. I mean,
yeah,
even something that happens that far away, it's just kind of...
Yeah,
that was what
it weighs on you. And you feel for the people there that, you know, are just going through it. I mean, going through it now, and then you're just kind of really probably still getting over everything that happened in January there, too. So
exactly. And, I mean, ISIS or ISIL or whatever you want to call them, the terrorists. Apparently, this morning I saw that they're making threats against the U.S., specifically Washington. So continuing story there, just a tough deal. But anyway, let's turn to some lighter fare. College football, Mississippi State. Had a big game against Alabama over the weekend. Didn't go so well for the Bulldogs. 31-6, the Crimson Tide rolling. And as Spencer Hall wrote this morning for SB Nation, Alabama's never going to lose again, and everything is terrible, basically. And it's just they're not going to let us have any fun. Alabama's going to win every game. They're going to win the national title, probably.
It's kind of their MO is, an early season loss that seems to sink everybody else. They've just been able to recover that more than anybody.
And the farther away we get from that loss to Ole Miss, the more inexplicable it seems.
Yeah.
Because right now I have a feeling if they played again, they'd win by like 3 touchdowns. Easy.
You'd think so. I mean, they're rolling right now. I guess it would just depend on which Ole Miss team showed up that day, which has kind of been the deal this year with Ole Miss.
Yeah, they were off this past weekend. Had a tough loss to Arkansas. The offense looked great. I think the offense is fine. And now they get LSU at home this weekend. And LSU... stumbling a bit now. Just they lost to Arkansas as well. So the Hogs having another late season surge, kind of like last year. And so going to be an interesting game this weekend in Oxford. Again, with that offense, Ole Miss has a really good shot at beating LSU. And I think as long as they can not let Fournette run wild, as he's done at times, then they can win that game. Now, Alabama found a way to stop him, but that's Alabama. So...
Yeah, and I guess Arkansas, too, to some degree. But, that game doesn't have the luster, I guess, that it looked like it was going to have a month and a half ago when you might have had two undefeated teams, and now you got a combined 5 losses. But
yeah, things change quickly in the SEC. And Mississippi State has to go to Arkansas, which is a scary proposition.
Especially right now, yeah.
Especially right now, yeah. So, I mean, you got two teams, Ole Miss and State, both 7-3. One of them's going to end up with 4 losses at least by the end of the season because we got the Egg Bowl next week.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just kind of, MSU, I figured this year they were an 8-9 win team. I thought Ole Miss should have been at least a 10 win team with the talent they have, but they're going to do 9 wins at best in the regular season. And certainly that's possible. Get a good bowl game out of it. So anyway, 2 big games coming up this weekend for the Bulldogs and the Rebels. And by the way, while I'm thinking about it, Thursday, double coverage, the podcast with Parrish Alford and Logan Lowry. They'll have another episode looking ahead to those 2 big games. You can find it at doublecoverage.djournal.com or download it on your iTunes or your podcast app if you have an Android or something like that. Logan and Parrish will have a new episode coming this Thursday. But today, Chris, we got a lot to do. We got a lot to talk about.
We've
got, despite Derek not being here, we've got Bobby Harrison, we got Scott Morris, we got Zach Orsborne, and of course, it's Monday. We've got
bum, 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 bum.
Crime reports. It's going to be a good show.
We need to play the law. We need that Law and Order theme song.
Oh, bum, the little. Dun dun.
Yeah.
We need to find
before
that.
Your crime report. I'll get on that.
But we can find that. Okay. Let's get things going with M. Scott Morris back on the show. Welcome.
Good morning.
How are you?
Or good afternoon, as the case may
whenever
be.
Whenever you're listening.
Howdy, y'all.
It's a great thing about a podcast. You can listen when and wherever you
That's
want.
That's right.
I'm going to talk with Scott here about a story he had in Sunday's paper. You can find it also at djournal.com. Touching story, the older gentleman over in Itawamba County named Willie Butch Steele, I guess known to most people as Butch. He has a sawmill, something he kind of started doing as a hobby after he retired from the Army, and was always quick to help people with that skill, if he could, helping people rebuild things, out in Oklahoma, I think.
He was on a disaster, Mississippi Baptist disaster relief team. He traveled to Oklahoma. He was, you know, when we had our tornado in Tupelo, he was out helping. And when we had our Smithfield tornado, he was out there helping. He goes to Smithfield Baptist Church. Mr. Steele, he, over the summer, was diagnosed with acute leukemia.
Yeah.
And they tried chemotherapy and it did not work. And so basically he's on nothing. And his wife, Marcia Dean Steele, said, they gave him until Christmas, but they don't really know what they have.
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Steele, with his sawmill hobby, he has customers.
Right.
And so he has a bunch of wood on his property. He had a whole bunch of cedar and red oak and poplar and such, and he couldn't do it. He couldn't cut it for his customers. Well, he's got buddies on the internet who are similar to him, who just love woodworking, and for their hobby is getting out there and sweating and getting splinters and cutting, and they all have big saws, portable saws. And they've worked together to help other people. They've gone up to Oklahoma. They've gone to Texas a while back to help a fellow Forestry Forum member whose house burned down. They went through a bunch of board feet for him.
Yeah.
Well, last week, about 15 men and women came to a New Salem community in Itawamba County, and they cut that wood. They expected to do about 10,000 board feet, and they cut it. And Mr. Steele was there to watch quite a bit in his motorized wheelchair. And it was an amazing thing to be a part of. It's one of those things where, you know, in newspaper gets a lot of bad rap, press does, but the stuff I do, feature writing stuff, almost always enjoyable.
Oh, yeah.
And this one, particularly poignant, just to be invited, to be trusted to come out and tell this story and to be able to talk to people and to be there. Really was privileged to be able to write this story and meet the people who were involved. And I tell you what, one of the buddies, the guy who organized it, his name was Lynn Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Davis, I think he summed it up in a way that wasn't just specific, although, you know, he did have nice things to say about Mr. Steele's willingness to help other people. But this is a quote I have toward the end of the story from Mr. Davis. He said, most people have opportunities to help people. Anybody can make an excuse and look away, but all you have to do is open your heart and the opportunity will be there to help somebody.
Yeah.
It really is that simple. And, you know, I think that quote was just on such full display when we went, Thomas Wells and I. He took some wonderful photographs as well.
He did.
And when we went last week. So if you haven't seen your Sunday paper, it's in there. And it's also, like I said, on djournal.com. You can track that down. And
and what's really cool about this is you met a lot of these people, like you said, on this forestry forum online.
Right.
And so it's people coming in from Alabama, Georgia, as far away
Texas
as
and
Texas and Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, that's got to be one of the coolest things to be able to just have people come from distant places. I mean, you got your neighbors you can rely on, but, you know, in this day and age, your neighbor might not be necessarily next door.
So I had talked to him for a while, and then I'd gone to interview his friends,
sure.
And then I'd watched for a while. And I went up to him, and I kneeled down below at his chair, and I said, Mr. Steele, I can't help thinking if I were in your chair, I would just be amazed right now. And that's when he said just what a humbling experience it was just to see all of his friends had come and do this for him. And so it's an outpouring of, you know, it's one of those things where, like, there's loving somebody.
Yeah.
There's saying you're loving somebody. And then there's also doing your love for somebody. And, you know, these guys may never use the term love all week, but they're out there doing this work, and every single board they cut was an act of love.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful to see.
And this was basically his last load of wood or his last load of logs.
Yeah, well, they're not his. They were his. He agreed to cut them for customers.
Sure.
So these guys came to fill that, you know, to fulfill that promise, to fulfill that commitment that he had. They did it for him. And so, you know, the people who left wood with Mr. Steel can enough down tree from Mr. Steel can now take their boards and go home and do with it what they will.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a really cool story. Like I said, very touching. Check it again and check it out in Sunday's Journal or djournal.com. Good story. And again, great photos by Thomas Wells there also. Scott, thank you, sir.
Thanks for having me this morning or this afternoon, as the case may be.
Or in the middle of the night.
Or the middle of the night. Or this evening.
Yeah. Tomorrow, Tuesday.
Whenever you happen to visit the memo.
Listen to us anytime. We're always there.
Always there for you.
Up next, we have Bobby Harrison, the Daily Journal's Capital Bureau Chief. Bobby, I guess it was last month you had done a story about revenue collections were down for, I guess that'd be the month of September, and people are going to watch it closely, but it's not cause for concern yet. But, you know, now in Saturday's paper, I guess, you had a follow-up from that October, the collections were still down. Is it starting to be a little bit more of a cause for concern?
Yeah, I think so, Chris. Now, it's important to note that when you say revenue collections are down, they're down compared in reference to the estimate. The legislative leadership and the governor set an estimate of the amount of revenue they expect to collect during a fiscal year, with the fiscal year, of course, runs from July 1st to June 30th. And they set an estimate how much money they're going to collect, that the state's going to collect and all this from its various revenue sources. And that estimate is what they used to base the budget on. They that's the money. Well, the money being collected right now is going to fund them.
Hey, Bobby. For
this fiscal year, and so when the estimate is down, it's kind of a big deal. Yeah.
You cut out for a second. That's why.
Okay. The revenue estimate is amount of money that the state, the legislature has to appropriate for, you know, for education, for health care, for law enforcement, for all those things that we expect state government to perform. And if the revenue does not come in to meet that estimate, at some point in time there's going to be an issue, and the governor or the legislature or the combination of two are going to cut budgets or dip into rainy day funds to make up for that the money that the lack of money to meet the estimate. It hadn't gotten to that point yet. At this point, revenue is $28.3 million, 1.69% below the amount that was estimated. It was estimated to be. So they hadn't got to that point yet without make budget cuts or dip into the rainy day fund. But if you have another bad month in November and December, if those months are not up to the estimate, then at some point the legislature and the governor are going to have to look at alternatives to make up that money. It's important to note that, you know, they, by law, they appropriate 98% of the estimate. So, you know, right there, they got like $100 million in reserves for just this type of thing that they could dip into without too much pain. But, I mean, I think what this does, Chris, what this indicates is that there's a, you know, most other states right now are experiencing a lot better revenue collection than Mississippi is. And that's a long range cause for concern that I think that the leaders got to look at.
Are there theories, Bobby, for why that is? Too early?
Well, it's interesting. Today, the governor and the legislative budget committee, which includes the House Speaker Philip Gunn, the Lieutenant Governor Tate Reeves, the two appropriations chairs in the House and Senate, and some other key legislators are on. They're going to meet to set the initial revenue estimate to begin the process of developing a budget for the next fiscal year, which begins on July 1st, 2016. And so they meet today to set that estimate. As part of that process, Darren Webb, the state economist, is going to, you know, he's part of the group that makes a recommendation to the legislative leadership and the governor as to what that estimate should be. So, you know, we can expect to hear from the state economist Darren Webb today on maybe some of the issues that are leading to these sluggish revenue collections for the state. You know, Chris, the main problem is the sales tax collections. You know, that's the largest source of revenue for the state. Mississippi has one of the largest sales tax rates in the nation. We collect 7% on each dollar on most retail items, including on food, which groceries, which is, you know, we most states don't do that, but we do. And our sales tax collections are not only not meeting the estimate, but at this point in time, they're not even being collected at the rate they were collected the previous year, which is, you know, kind of unusual when that occurs, because it's just kind of a natural flow of things with more people, inflation and things. Most times, revenue progresses in the state. It doesn't go backwards. So the fact that the sales tax collections, which account for about 38% of the total state revenue, the fact that the sales tax collections are not even doing quite as well as it did last year is a big concern. You know, I'm be interested to hear what the state economist says about that today. But, you know, and I'm definitely not a state economist, and I definitely didn't stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night. But just, you know, I think this goes to the issue that, you know, there's so many people in Mississippi, you know, just kind of living paycheck to paycheck, and you know, there's not much inflation at this point in time, the way the current economic flows. So, you know, there's not new revenue coming in, so sales tax is not growing. Now, you know, back a few months ago, the state economist spoke to the same group, the Legislative Budget Committee, and he spoke about sales tax collection then, and he was concerned then, saying that, you know, he expected sales tax collection to be doing better because gas prices have decreased substantially, right. And he referred to it as a fuel tax dividend, you know, people having to pay less for gas, so that should
use it in other areas. Yeah.
Discretionary money spent in other areas, but either Mississippi, the people are saving that money or maybe using it to pay off existing debt, but they're not using a lot of it to buy more retail stuff. Maybe, you know, they're saving up to buy for Christmas, and we'll see a big boom in November and December, but we'll just have to see about that.
Yeah, I was going to say this, they're coming in on a pretty big time for sales tax and sales tax collections. I mean, I'm sure that's factored into the projection, is that they're also expecting it to get more in those months, but this will be a big time maybe for them to try to make up some of that.
Right. I mean, these people that make this... people who make the recommendation to the governor and legislative leadership, you know, it's, you know, people who, you know, it's people who understand these types of things, like the, you know, head of the Department of Revenue, the state treasurer, as I said, Darren Webb, the state economist, and a couple of others, and they factor that in, the fact that, you know, our best months for the state's best months for revenue collections generally are around the holidays, around, you know, Christmas. So, you know, so we should see a spike in revenue collections during November, December, but they factor that into the equation. So, if nothing else, I expect today's estimate that these financial experts recommend to the leadership, to the legislative leadership and the governor, is going to be very modest growth at best. And I expect the leadership, the legislative leadership and the governor to adopt that estimate. So that means that there's not going to be a lot of new revenue for the state unless things change dramatically in the coming months. There's not going to be a lot of revenue for the legislature to appropriate, a lot of new revenue for the legislature to appropriate during the upcoming 2016 session that begins in January. Now, Chris, real quickly, this all kind of ties in. You may have another question about it. I think it's important to get this out. This all comes on the heels of the legislature and the governor making some not huge, but some substantial tax cuts during the past 4 years.
I was going to ask about that, yeah.
You know, like during the upcoming fiscal year, starting July 1st, $126 million is supposed to be taken out of the state general fund by the reduction in the so-called business inventory tax. So that's going to be a big hit right there on top of what already is a sluggish revenue collections. And this also comes on the heels of, you know, we just had elections, and there were a lot of promises made to a lot of different groups that supported various candidates. And one of the biggest promises is the business wants another tax cut, which would be the elimination of the so-called franchise tax, which is essentially a tax on companies' investments and holdings. In some cases, that's some people say that's a tax that's unfair to business. Other people say that a lot of businesses don't pay any other tax except for that tax. So, but if they start to eliminate that tax, that's going to take another substantial hit on the state general fund. And if they do the business, the franchise tax, there's a school of thought that they can't do that without giving a tax break to the everyday, you know, to the average taxpayer, mm-hmm. just to you and me and all the other people who work in the state and pay taxes, and because they've given so many taxes to businesses over the past 4 years, political leaders are saying, well, we need to give a tax cut to everybody else too. So I mean, it could, you know, at last session, you know, they tried to, you know, the last tax cut proposal would have been a $550 million hit on the state general fund over a period of years. So, I mean, there's a lot of moving parts as the governor and legislative leadership meet today to decide on a revenue estimate for the upcoming budget year.
Yeah, sure. So it'll make, I guess, the budget process for next year, you know, that much more tight. As you said, what about in terms of this year's budget and the possibility for mid-year cuts? I mean, when would be the time to start looking at, when the situation could get to the point where those would become necessary? January, February, by the time the legislature convenes?
Yeah, at this point, Chris, with, 28 million below the estimate, that's very manageable, and they could probably, you know, that's almost a rounded number when you're talking about a $6 billion roughly general fund budget. So they can get by without having to do too much. But you have a couple of more months like that, especially in November and December. Those key months that, you know, account mm-hmm. for a lot of state revenue, it could, you know, one or two things could happen. You know, revenue is down, in November, December. Those are big months, so it would really compound the problem. But then on the flip side, maybe, you know, as I said a while ago, people are saving up to buy Christmas presents in November, December. So those could actually be good big months. So at that point in time, maybe this whole thing kind of evens out.
Yeah.
We just have to wait and see. But you know, that's when it would occur. If they had to make some cuts, they would occur in January and February. The legislature would be in session, so the governor wouldn't have to do it by himself, which he has the authority to do within certain limits. And then, as I stated earlier, there's also rainy day funds that, you know, you can tap into to avoid cuts. So, I mean, that would just have to be a debate that the legislature and the governor had about how to address those issues if it did reach that point.
Sure. Well, thank you very much, Bobby. Appreciate you joining us today.
All right, Chris. Enjoyed it.
Okay, let's welcome Zach Orsborn back into the show. Nailed it that time, didn't I?
There you go.
Got it right.
Perfect.
Zach Orsborn here with us to talk about iPads and a pretty cool use for them with the Tupelo Convention and Visitors Bureau. Going to roll out this thing with where they've got, you've got these kiosks often at hotels. You can find out info about what to do in town. This is going to be iPad-operated kiosks in a handful of Tupelo hotels, so visitors can figure out, you know, maybe where to go eat, what to do while they're in town, live shows, stuff like that. And it's going to be, you're used to seeing those big, bulky kiosks. This is going to be different, Zach.
Right.
What's the setup going to be like there?
Well, the CVB provides their metal stands, and they have locks on it where you can put the iPads in.
Right.
And they have the branding with the little Elvis statue and all the nice colors, right, and stuff. And basically what it is the hotels buy the iPads, and then CVB loads a mini website onto the iPads. And it has four blocks. It's attractions, events, live music, and restaurants.
Right.
And they can click on one of those, and it's pretty much just like the CVB website with all the listings.
Yeah.
But it's just more compact, and there's also a quick 1 minute video.
Yeah.
That you can watch that kind of showcases Tupelo.
And just really kind of easier for people to use, right. Because people are by this point are comfortable with touch screens and iPads and all that stuff. So it's just real quick mm-hmm. and easy. And I assume that was the biggest attraction for them.
Yeah. I played around with it a little bit, and it was very very efficient, and when you click restaurant, it's the listings are filtered by Yelp reviews.
Yeah,
so it kind of has customer reviews other right. than alphabetical
right That caught my eye. I thought that was a pretty cool way to do it because, you know, you start with A and then you go to B. But what if one of the best restaurants in town starts with, you know, a W or whatever? Right. People might not see that. So, yeah, Yelp reviews, which I use Yelp quite a bit. And I live here.
Right.
So, that's a pretty cool way to set it up. Neil McCoy, spoke with him for this story. Neil with the CVB. Good guy. Was on the show last week, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, you know, I like the approach they're taking. He's like, you know, we just want, you know, regarding the restaurant listings, we want it based on what people are saying, mm-hmm. not on the polished CVB answer, as he put it.
Yeah.
And also like that, you know, I mean, this is about tourism and making money, getting people out into the community.
Right.
And this seems like another way to do it. It seems like CVB has been pretty good about coming up with these kinds of things.
Pat Raspberry, she's the in-market strategist. And she used to just email all the events out to hotels and stuff to kind of fill their calendars up. But they figured this would be a more efficient way. And I talked to Stephanie Browning with Hampton Inn & Suites. She said it will help out, especially when people are waiting in long lines on Friday nights to get information. They can just click on the iPad.
And go ahead, Chris.
Zach, do you know where they got this idea? Is this based on something they saw in another city?
Yeah, I don't know if they got it from another city, but I think they wanted a kiosk, and they were going to get like kind of their own kiosk without the iPad, and then they just kind of researched to figure out that iPads were more accessible.
Yeah, and there's that's something other places do, but a lot of big cities apparently don't even do this yet. So Tupelo's kind of getting kind of an early adopter, I guess you could say. Seven hotels, I believe, initially will be having these kiosks. The one you mentioned, the Hampton Inn & Suites, Hilton Garden Inn, Quality Inn, Baymont Inn, Wingate, Days Inn, and La Quinta.
Yeah.
So that's something hopefully will grow and be effective for the local businesses. So that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff, Zach. Appreciate you. And on the Twitter, @thedaily_Zach with a K.
Mm-hmm.
Good deal. Perfect. Thank you, man.
No problem.
All right. So those iPads, that'll be neat, Brad. I think just, another way to reach people and get information out. And I guess at the end of the day, that's kind of what they're all about there, is letting people know, you know, what to do in Tupelo while they're here.
It's cool stuff.
Yeah, it will be. Well, Monday now. The most anticipated event of Monday is
Crime Reports.
There we go. We got any good ones this week?
We have some good ones this week, Mr. Kiefer. Let's get to it because we got actually quite a few. A Morville woman said someone on Facebook asked for her cell phone number, so she gave it. Hey, stranger contacts me on Facebook, wants my cell number. Sure, why not?
Why not?
What could go wrong? She then started a text conversation and was told she had won $90,000. Wow. So someone randomly contacts you on Facebook and tells you you've won $90,000. That's a pretty good day.
Give them your bank account immediately so they can direct deposit the funds.
Well, they told her she needed to send $1,000 via MoneyGram to cover the filing fee. Well, that's normal, right? When you win a random lottery you never bought a ticket for or even entered in.
There's usually a filing fee. There's always a catch.
It was only after she sent the money that she realized, hey, it might be a scam, and contacted the sheriff's office. Yeah, it might be, lady. You're down $1,000. Good luck getting that back. It's 2015, Chris. Like, if people... Aren't people a little more savvy by this point to this sort of thing? You'd think, but I guess not because people
still do it, right?
The scams haven't gone away, obviously.
I'm still waiting for that African prince to give back the $500 I sent him.
Some news for you, Chris. Yeah. I haven't seen. I actually have not heard of this particular scam, the via Facebook scam. Pretty bold. But, well, there you go.
Yeah, it seems like Facebook would be a little bit easier to track an IP address or an account but I don't know.
Maybe they'll get it back. I don't know. An officer drove up on a two-car wreck on South Gloucester near Daybright. One of the drivers smelled of alcohol and admitted drinking a pint of whiskey an hour earlier. He was taken to jail. Of whiskey. I guess.
Hell yeah, I'm drunk.
And yeah, he was. I mean, a pint of beer, that's nothing. A pint of whiskey. That's a lot of whiskey. It's not a full fifth of whiskey, but it's a lot of whiskey to consume in one sitting or War. Yeah.
At least I wonder if is there a same guy
owned
from,
up to
from last week?
It could be. Who knows?
Who admitted? Was that what he said last week? Hell yeah.
He said, hell yeah, I'm bad drunk.
I'm bad drunk.
That's what he said. Yeah, I bet this guy was too. Jeez. A Shannon woman said her 26-year-old son, quote, got high smoking weed and was being loud and cussing. And she just wanted him to go to bed. Or jail, then he won't be loud and cussing. You know, could do that. 26-year-old son. He's 26. He's more than a quarter century old. He's sitting at his mom's house smoking pot. And
she's got to call the cops to get him to go to bed.
This kid's got a bright future ahead of him. Let's go to Mooreville. A Mooreville woman got home and noticed some things moved around in her house. Uh-oh. And then noticed a man in the back hall.
He just said was it James?
It could have been. He said he was just there to use the bathroom. So she let the man use her phone after he used the bathroom to call his girlfriend who came and picked him up. After the couple left, she noticed a .22 caliber rifle and a Remington shotgun were missing. I feel like I'm missing a crucial detail. Because instead of, like, freaking out and running out of the house and calling the cops, she lets him go ahead and do his business. And then, oh, yeah, sure, borrow my phone. Well, and don't stab me to death.
And she had already noticed things were missing before she saw him, you said, right?
Either she's not too bright, or maybe this was like a guy who was doing some work on her
land. Yeah, maybe so.
And just kind of let himself in when probably he should have asked. I don't know. That's the only reasonable explanation I can really come up with.
Well, they ought to be able to track him, right? I mean, if he used her phone, then they've at least got a number that he called. Yeah.
I don't know. It's people, man. I don't know. Okay, we got one more here, Chris. Academy Sports, a new sports and outdoors place over on the North Gloucester by the mall. Manager at the store said a man stole $200 by, quote, deceiving and confusing the cashier. Okay. Here we go. See if y'all can keep up. The man brought a Sprite to the register and started to pay with a $100 bill for a Sprite. It costs like, what, $1.50?
Yeah.
I hate those people.
Sounds like Ocean's 11 coming up.
He asked the cashier for different amounts and configurations for the change. In the process, getting the extra money. He walked out of the store quickly before the cashier realized what had happened.
$200 extra dollars?
Said he stole $200, gave her $100, and somehow got $200. He made a, like, yeah.
So, like, I'll give you two ones for $1.50.
You know what's funny? And this was on the blog. When I read this, I was like, man, that really sounds like an Abbott and Costello routine. So I went to YouTube, and guess what? It's actually an Abbott and Costello routine.
Of course it is.
It is. Seriously. It's where Abbott fools Costello into, like, giving him two tens for a five or something
right,
like that.
Right, right.
Yeah, and it just goes on for a couple of minutes, and it's hilarious.
What's the name of the routine?
Let's see. I've got it on. I actually included it. I embedded it on the blog.
Okay.
Yeah, two tens for a five. That's what it's called. And it's, yeah, I suggest you go look it up. It's this guy basically just made off with $200 by pulling an Abbott and Costello.
Watching Abbott and Costello.
And, you know, at least kudos to him for having good taste in comedy.
Yeah.
If nothing else. So that was.
And for knowing who's on first.
Poor cashier. Poor thing. So that's it for crime reports today. We'll have more on the blog throughout the week at tipsheet.djournal.com. Check it out. It's good stuff. So,
highlight of the
week.
There
we go.
Yeah.
Well, Chris?
Another show. Brad, we talked a little bit at the opening and didn't kind of really get into it. But like you mentioned, it was just a heavy weekend, just thinking about everything in Paris that happened over the weekend. And I don't know. I mean, I guess it's just it's a crazy time we live in. You know, my wife and I were talking about that a little bit Friday relative to, you know, or these times, you always have that sense that now is crazier than any other time. And, you know, we were talking about, I mean, I can't imagine living through the Cuban Missile Crisis and just,
right.
You know, I mean, all kind of times. But
the uncertainty of not knowing when or where something might happen.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I guess it's just reminded, you know, anytime something like this happens is that there is that uncertainty. And it's,
yeah.
I don't know, it's kind of.
It's very disconcerting, even from, like I said, thousands of miles away. And, you know, I've never even been to Paris. I've never even been out of the country.
Yeah, I mean, I've never been to Paris,
you know, I think I saw today there are. Of the people who died, there were like from 19 different nationalities of people who were among those killed. Most of them killed at that concert. It was a band, an American band, actually, Eagles of Death Metal, were having a concert. And the band got out fine, but a lot of people did not, because they just opened fire in this concert hall. There were about 1,500 people there at least.
Yeah.
And that right there is really what brought it home for me, I guess, because you've got all these people having a great time listening to a good band. I think they're promoting a new album. They've been around a while. Just having a nice time on a Friday night, people smiling and singing and dancing and whatever, and then it just goes from that to,
yeah,
like the total opposite of that in just a matter of seconds. And it's a different kind of war that we're fighting now. It's not like it used to be, where you knew exactly who the enemy was,
where they were, and where to find them.
Yeah, and you knew battles were held in certain places or whatever. Now it's just completely different.
And that's going to be the other interesting thing is what the response is. I saw that France.
Yeah, I know France has already responded.
Airstrikes and
that sort of response is good, I guess. But again, it's hard to get those people in one spot to attack them. Because they're all over the place,
yeah,
and they're good at hiding as well. So, a story to obviously keep following, and we'll even we'll have updates. We don't do a lot of nation world stuff on the site. We're pretty local, but we've had some stuff on this over the weekend, and we'll continue to do so at djournal.com and in the hard copy of the journal itself. Okay, remind y'all to follow the show on Twitter at DJournalMemo. You can follow Chris on Twitter at Chris Kiefer, myself at Brad Locke with an E.
With an E?
Yes. E is silent.
Speaking of silence.
Speaking of silence, that's just like Derek isn't silent because, again, Derek cannot be on the show. He's lost his voice. I don't know.
Woke up without a voice. I wonder what he was.
I don't know what he was yelling at or what happened, but
Mississippi State game was rough on Saturday.
Hopefully he'll be better by Wednesday, which is when we will be back. We'll have a show then.
We can do your middle name.
Maybe we'll finally get to revealing my middle name. I know that's been a
suspense.
Yes,
continues.
Cliffhanger for all of y'all. But check out the news and sports and entertainment and all the stuff we cover at djournal.com. Follow us on Twitter at D Journal Now. And real quick, let's remind y'all once again about Thrive Marketing. It's a full-service digital marketing company located in Tupelo, providing websites, search engine optimization, social media management, email and text messaging services for local businesses. Thrive.ms. All right, Chris, thanks for filling in, bud.
Thanks. Thank you.
Good as always. And we'll be back Wednesday. Hopefully Derek's voice will also be back on Wednesday. Until then, have a good one.